Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Full Throttle. It's Monday, the 21st of September 2020. Greg Haynes here. Julian Ryder's with us as well. Hello, Jules.
Good day, Greg. It's been a fun weekend.
It has, hasn't it? The Catalan round of World Superbikes. We were just chatting off air. We've literally just gone off air here in the commentary box. Three different manufacturers have won three races. That's never happened before.
Well, yeah, because of course this three race format is relatively new. And Jonathan Reyes basically hogged it. We've had one bloke win all three races several times. But having a Kawasaki followed by Michael Vandermark and then Chaz Davis on a Ducati for the third one. I like the Catalunya circuit. It doesn't tend to favour one type or make of motorcycle, but it tests all aspects. If you can get your motorbike right, you know, a good setup, the usual good engineering compromise, you're in with a chance.
Well, it's good we brought these Strepsils with us to the commentary box, isn't it? I think this weekend. But where do we start then? Because first of all, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, please do. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts and all the rest of it, Eurosport websites. But we're just starting to get into that phase now, aren't we, where we're yawning a bit, the adrenaline begins to drop, because It has been a weekend full of energy.
A really good weekend's racing.
It's really solid weekend. A real shame, of course, the crowd can't get in, but there's no point to keep going on about this because we know that's the situation in 2020.
And we know what the situation is now, so don't moan about things you can't do anything about.
It doesn't look as though it's getting any better either at the moment.
That is the problem.
In the UK, but we shall see. I think, first of all, then, there's some real star standout performers, but championship, let's just get that out of the way because it's job done, Jonathan Ray. In fact, more than job done. It's a very good weekend for Jonathan Ray.
Won the first race and then just managed the situation, especially in that final race. Mm. Wasn't, I'm not saying he was taking it easy because that's a ridiculous thing to say, but he certainly wasn't going to put himself in the danger zone into taking risks to go from fourth to third.
He's Mr. Calculated, isn't he? He's Mr. Adaptation. He's Mr. Calculated. There's a lot of names coming out.
It's an icy cool racing brain at work.
He's smart.
He was in front of Scott Redding, and then Tom Sykes did him a favour by also getting between him and Scott Redding.
Yes.
So why the heck would you try and put yourself in a position of overriding the motorcycle and heading for a crash when you were increasing your championship lead?
Staggering stuff. 97 career wins now. If he did a treble at Magny-Cours, and some people would expect that, knowing how strong he goes there, not only would he quite likely wrap up a sixth title, he's won his last three there, of course, duels in France.
No wonder he likes it.
Could make it 100 career wins, and even if he doesn't in France, it could happen in Estoril. Staggering career. Scott Redding, of course, is chief rival, and both sides, let's be clear here, both the Ducati side with Scott Redding and his crew chief Giovanni Crupi, and the Kawasaki side, Jonathan Ray, his crew chief, Per Arriba. I think it's fair to say they both admire the job the other guys are doing this year.
There is nothing but professional respect for
real
what the other lot can do.
But what happened with Reading again this weekend? My first question mark is, and we obviously haven't spoken to Scott Reading at this point, but why did they use the harder tyre in the sprint race? They obviously felt that was the right thing to do. They were the only guys to really do that.
Well, Shaky Byrne couldn't explain it.
No.
And he couldn't think of a reason why it would happen.
No.
So I certainly can't. I'm not going to second guess. They must have thought there's only two reasons. Both are extreme.
Right.
One of which is that they thought it could work. The second is they knew they couldn't do a damn thing with the standard tyre, so the only chance was to throw a ridiculous idea at it and see if it stuck, which you don't do at that level. That really is not what happens at World Championship level.
So I suppose either Scott himself as the rider just doesn't feel at all comfortable with the X, because you have to think he's tried it across practice, obviously. Or maybe
he used it in Teruel.
Well, indeed. If even for one of the longer races. Yeah. But for the 10-lapper, obviously then, I guess he just didn't feel he was going to be able to get to the end with enough grip.
Well, it was interesting that in the first long race, the riders that used that soft tyre went off a cliff at about three-quarter distance in terms of lap times.
Yes.
There was sudden...
So this is Bautista and Rinaldi, isn't it?
Sudden and massive deterioration in lap times.
Yeah, yeah.
Around laps 15, 16.
So this is a combination of riders, different motorcycles, different nature of circuit and so on.
Yeah, weight of rider, temperature. It is such a complicated equation.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that, as you say, Bautista and Rinaldi, I think one went off the cliff at lap 15 and one at lap 16.
Yes.
Really close together.
Yeah, we were looking at that earlier on today, weren't we? And in fact, the same thing happened for Xavi Forres, who used that tyre as well on the Kawasaki, the Pichetti Kawasaki. It didn't work, did it? In those conditions, at that circuit, different bikes and different riders there, it didn't work this
time. It's fine if you could have opened up a lead of 10 seconds in three quarters of the 15 laps, you might have stood a chance of getting it home.
Yeah.
But that's a fairly extreme idea that... another one you don't really play with at World Championship level.
And a couple of things we've been talking about over dinner this weekend, because obviously in this podcast, as you know, Jules, we're not always just going to talk about what we've already said on the telly, because that would be boring for people. But we've talked about two things, haven't we? One of them, the fact that the tyre is the most important element, whether it's bike racing or car racing. So let's discuss that. And also the fact that, and it seems like stating the bleeding obvious, really, but a race weekend is just putting together lots of small things into one big pie, really, isn't it?
I always quote my old hero, Ivan Major, the greatest speedway rider that's ever lived. Yes, I know Tony Rickardson, but hey, allow me, eh? Just live with it. And he described racing as a jigsaw puzzle.
There you go.
And every piece had to fit without being forced.
That's lovely. Yeah, because we've all done jigsaw puzzles, haven't we? Just one in the wrong place. Yeah.
And you weren't going to win a race until that last piece just slipped comfortably into position.
Because obviously, if one piece is missing, that's not going to work. If one piece is forced in, you've got to put something else in the wrong place.
I'll tell you what a perfectionist Ivan Major was.
As much as me.
When he played rugby, he might have been as twitchy as you about lining things up at right angles to other things.
As weird as me.
When he was a schoolboy sportsman, he'd play hockey on a Saturday, rugby on a Sunday. He was a Kiwi. He'd not just clean his boots, he'd launder the white laces.
That's far more than me.
That probably makes you look normal.
He'd launder the white laces.
Yes, of his.
And this is every single time he played, obviously. Wow.
And you can imagine, as a motorcycle racer, the standards he demanded of turnout and machinery.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing or both? Because I suppose when it's on a good day, it's absolutely
superb. He won six world titles.
Superb.
He's the greatest speed rider ever lived.
So probably the most demanding person that anyone he ever worked with has ever met.
He only had through his career, just forgive me, this is one of my heroes, one engine builder, one wheel builder, one mechanic
throughout his entire career. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Wow, that's amazing. So just repeat the name again for us.
Ivan Major, M-A-U-G-E-R, New Zealander, only man ever to have won three world titles on the bounce.
Wow, great stuff. I like stuff like that.
Yeah,
I like stuff
I had
like
the
that.
Honour to write his obituary for The Guardian.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A
couple of years ago. In fact, I think I may remember, I think it was our Eurosport colleague, Jack Burnicle, talking about him actually at some point. Over dinner on a BSB weekend.
As a lad in the Northwest, I used to go and he rode for the Bellevue Aces, the Manchester club.
Right.
So, of course, I used to go and watch.
And then the tyres. We were talking about the tyres. Now, as silly as this may sound, but it's completely true. The most important component for bike or car racing, because obviously that's where the power's going through the tyre, isn't it?
I'm going to borrow a phrase from Neil Spaulding. He used as a headline for a feature a long time ago. The tyre designs the bike. In a formula, and every world championship, apart from endurance, is a single tyre formula, control tyre. So you do not have the luxury of saying to, and you can't therefore say to the manufacturer either, well, build us one with a bit of a softer sidewall, build us a bigger Rotherhampton, build us that. No, you use this. Here it is. Get on with it. And you then have to adapt the motorcycle and or riding style. Complaining that the bike doesn't work like it did last year is a waste of oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to adapt and not try and
keep
changing the bike all the time. Yep. But how many riders do we see and drivers in car racing complaining about things like that? They don't seem to be able to reprogram their mind.
Well, this is what I'm not sure this is right, by the way. This is what Ducati are basically accusing Andrea Dovizioso of in Moto Grand Prix, of not adapting.
Which seems funny in some ways when you consider he is leading, well, the world championship at the moment. Yes,
so let's all sit and work that one out.
What's Dovi going to do next year, by the way?
What a
rider?
Very good question. I know Aprilia would love to have him, and he would no doubt be wonderful for them, but who knows? But Dovi's always given me the impression if he has to pack up, he won't really care too much. Spend more time with his motocrossers and his daughter.
And he, of course, is a majorly talented motocrosser as well, isn't he?
Yeah, and he rode with Caroli and all these people as a young motocrosser. So he is pretty useful on the motocross bike.
So in terms of star performances from the World Superbike weekend, my rider of the weekend, for what it's worth, is definitely Garrett Gerloff.
I think we have to say that.
It's been coming, hasn't it?
It has for the last couple of rounds. I mean, much as I'm delighted to see Chaz Davis back on top of the box,
yes.
Well, so he should be. You know, he is
a talented... He's going to be after you again.
He's going to be after me again. But he, a man of his talent,
yes,
and history and ability,
yes. Yeah.
We should not be waiting this long between victories for Chaz Davis.
So why have we been waiting this long then? What's gone wrong?
The V4, he thought the V4 would be the answer to all his prayers.
Mm.
And of course it wasn't.
Mm. Qualifying.
Yeah, Bautista leapt on it, and because it's very much a Moto Grand Prix derived bike, Bautista was immediately at home with it. And what's worse for you than your teammate kicking your backside regularly?
Yes.
But again, if it seems to me that Chaz comes good in the last race of the weekend, it takes them all weekend to get their heads around it.
We know one of the main reasons for that this year, though, don't we? The qualifying situation again.
Yep.
That qualifying
yep.
session, the Superpole session, for those of you who don't watch regularly, decides the grid for race one on Saturday and the sprint race on Sunday. Depending on where you finish in the 10-lap sprint race, that determines your grid position for the long race. And James Whittam, Shaky Byrne, they were discussing it in the Eurosport coverage on Sunday, weren't they? If you can be up the front of the grid, you've got a better chance. It seems very obvious to say, but I find it difficult, Jules, and I can't criticise these guys. Who am I to criticise anyone, really, because I don't even ride? But why can't they just focus? It's obviously not this simple. Why can't they just focus on one lap?
Because then you haven't spent time getting the bike set up for the race.
Well, certainly on a race, and I suppose with testing so limited.
Yeah, and
that's
testing
the problem, isn't
is
it?
Limited, which is a major problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And this was a new track, of course, so you're relying on, hopefully, experience in your pit as much as anything else.
Would it be better maybe then if the rules and regulations allowed the riders to put some qualifying tyres on so that at least they could have a few runs on a Q tyre at the end of practice? Because at the moment, they're not allowed to use them until Superpole, are they? You know, just to get a feel.
No, expanding the schedule for the day is always a bit tricky. It might be an idea, but you don't want people using qualifiers before qualifying. Really?
Okay. It needs that uncertainty about it. It's like with Gerloff, isn't it? On Saturday.
Yeah. Maybe
he was 15.
Yeah, maybe an extra qualifying tyre so you did have that option.
Just to have a go, yeah.
Just to have a go, maybe. Maybe a way forward. I'm not sure, Greg. I'm not sure. Instinct says...
Yeah, you're leaning away from that, aren't you?
I lean away from it, you know.
Yeah. But Garrett Gerloff, superb. And we need, don't we? We need new British talent coming up through the order. And we've been talking a little bit about Tom Booth Amos. Now, there's mixed opinion on whether, you know, that career is going to go far or not. But certainly a very impressive weekend for Tom Booth Amos. I think it's great, personally. And an American. Let's start with the American, Garrett Gerloff. He's really taken to a superbike with world championship regulations and doesn't know any of these European circuits.
Yep.
This is what I wanted to get into before. And it's come quickly, really, because Australia, he had the accident with Cortese and missed the whole of the Sunday after the crash in the warm-up, which knocked him unconscious. Then they've come back with these extremely high temperatures in Jerez and Portimao. and it was impossible to really compare any data and get any valuable, you know, comparisons going. So it's happened quite quickly, really.
And the culture shock of an American, a Texan, having to move to Europe, can't commute home and back. Don't underestimate that.
True. And now he can't even get back because of all of the problems.
Yeah. Yet he's showing the form of his life. It's very, very impressive.
Yeah.
And as Shaky and Jim were saying, and everybody else, he looked good on the motorbike. It wasn't just a third place you luck into because Bautista didn't start, because Toprak is injured, etc., because Redding couldn't get a tyre to work for him.
Mm.
It was a proper third place fought for right from the start.
And what a brilliant reaction as well, apart from
it. Lovely.
I love seeing, it's a shame everyone's faces are covered by these masks at the moment, but he was shouting and screaming and in a world where...
Basically being Texan, which was good to see.
It was very Colin Edwards, actually, wasn't it? Yeah. Yeehaw! But in a world, you know what sport's like, Jules. We've talked about this a few times over dinners, haven't we?
And
whether it's football or any sport now, it's all about thanking the sponsors and all this. And I understand that's where the money comes from. But isn't it great to see some raw emotion?
I was vaguely reminded of the first ever World Superbike champion, Fred Merkel, Flying Fred.
You know, he was a character.
Who was Californian, not Texan, so he's more rainy. The blonde surfer look. I remember Fred cheerfully grasping by the throat behind the garages at Donington Park to remind me that the guy who started all this standing on the footrests, flag-waving stuff, was not Kevin Schwantz. It was me, Flying Fred Merkel. Will you remember that, Julian? Yes, Fred!
But those were his actual words, were they?
Yeah. I started that. Not that damn Texan, I think, was the...
We could talk about this in the podcast. We probably couldn't on air. But
no,
Fred Merkel used to have some real adventures I hear at the circuits on and off the track. He used to have a good time.
Fred knew how to have a good time. He also knew how to win motorcycle races.
He certainly did.
A double world champion, the first two world titles. Kicked out of the American Honda team for unspecified reasons, most of which, those that are suggested, are actionable. I think it was actually to make room for Wayne Rainey rather than anything else. But...
Right.
Yeah. If you want blood, you've got it written on the back of his crash helmet. He was, I saw him at Vallelunga in 87. Because of him being slung out of America, he was racing a VFR in Italian Superbike. And he won this race at Vallelunga, sliding a big wooden teak knee sliders on his leathers down the
wooden.
Whole shit. Wooden. And wooden blue tea. Duct. Yeah, I know. And he slid the thing everywhere. He wheeled everywhere. The Italians loved him. They were screaming and yelling. Fred wins, dives into his pit, and leaps out onto the grid with a giant stars and stripes, which he brandishes at the grandstands. Bottles, bricks coming at him.
Oh, great.
Deliberately goaded, went out to goad them into a frenzy.
And you there, you witnessed it firsthand?
I was there.
Obviously didn't get hit by anything there.
Fred was quick enough to just be out of range, could stand there and go, try harder.
That's a great anecdote, isn't it? Funny enough, I was watching on YouTube the other day, and I've seen it before, but the coverage from 1993... of yourself and Keith Hugh, and I think it was Chris Herring, was it, from Motorcycle News?
Yes.
Talking about the Mexico palaver.
Oh.
And that was another time when all sorts of things were being thrown on the track and people were crossing the track and dogs and Coca-Cola delivery vans.
Yeah.
We've had some funny moments over the years, haven't we?
It's always fun. The other Italian throwing things was the Misano strike at the 500 Grand Prix.
When Frankie Keely won the race.
Which I also happened to be at. And lurking in the background. And
is it a coincidence that you always happen to be where all this chaos was going?
Yes, I like chaos. If you're a journalist, chaos is good. You get a story.
Yeah.
Neil McKenzie coming in and saying, "Hey, they couldn't quite reach us. The grass is just wide enough on the back straight."
Oh dear. Simon Buckmaster was on the podium with that race.
Yeah. Never seen anybody unhappier, by the way, than Frankie Keely.
Oh, you'll
have on the top of that podium.
You'll have to tell us the Neil McKenzie anecdote as well.
That's cool. That's cool. Neil's a great man. I like him enormously. I think I wrote in Road Racer magazine that he wouldn't get another. He was past his sell-by date for a factory ride. He didn't mention it to me for a couple of years until we were walking to the press conference at Donkin when he got third place on the private Yamaha. Mm, mm. And it's not bad for a bloke past his sell-by date, Julian.
So this was 2 years after you'd written
it? At least a year after, probably 2 years.
Really?
Now, the fact that I'd spent my entire career writing for magazines in a dozen countries about what a hero Neil McKenzie was, you know. Oh, what a ride. And generally, the typical racer, you see, they only remember the one you can write for 10 years saying what a hero they are.
Yes.
The first time you write anything vaguely bad, yeah, the only thing they remember.
Yeah.
And what they hate most is that you were right.
Yeah,
that, and I was right.
I've had that experience as well. Most of the time when people get upset with you, which, touch wood, again, is not too often, luckily.
Greg, it goes with the job.
It
mate.
Does, doesn't it?
It goes with the job.
But usually it's when you've had to just report a fact that, yeah, they're not happy about. Oh, Neil, I hope you're listening to the podcast. By the way, we mentioned Frankie Keeley there, didn't we? And just a quick note on Frankie Keeley. He's not at all well at the moment. It's really sad news, Jules, around the paddock and racing in general, because he's such a character, such a racer, Frankie Keeley.
Frankie Keeley has announced publicly that he has Parkinson's disease. A few of us have known it for a while, but obviously, not the sort of thing you broadcast until the man himself decides he wants to make it public. Horrible disease, really nasty, degenerative, incurable disease. But Frankie, you wish him strength, is all we can say, because he is everything you ever wanted an Italian motorcyclist to be.
Mm.
Dashingly good-looking, romantic, occasionally completely off his trolley, and just fast, you know, fast, you know, and one of the last proponents of the rostrum or straw-baled school of motorcycle racing.
Yes, yes.
And a multiple winner at all levels. Good on a 250, good on a 500, demonic on a superbike.
Mm.
I think when he went to the classic event in Australia a January ago,
yeah,
he had some clues that things weren't quite right.
Mm.
And there was a vibration, and it wasn't the bike, it was Frankie, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm.
And he's now making jokes about the human body is like a motorcycle. When it's not totally correct, something vibrates. So he's got his normal
sense of humour
going.
Yeah.
And it's we wish him well.
We certainly do. We certainly do. In fact, were you at Assen when he charged into the press conference with his dressing gown?
I was commentating on it, yeah.
You were commentating.
Well, yeah, that's the worst moment of his career. How could such a stylish man as Frankie Keeley do that in basically a blue toweling hotel bathrobe, you know? Dear me.
I bet Foggy enjoyed it, though, who, of course, had won that race. They didn't touch, though, did they? Keeley made a mistake and crashed into the chicane.
They were really actually quite... Foggy didn't have many friends, but him and Keeley got on up to that point really quite well.
Up to that point. Yeah, Foggy. Good mates with James Whittam, of course. By the way, how hilarious was that clip on Twitter a few weeks ago, and Foggy fell in the mud. Did you see that, Jules?
I did. By the way, I was going to backtrack for a second.
Yeah.
I got on fine with Neil McKenzie. I think we've forgiven each other about that.
Oh, he's not heard this. Neil stopped listening to the podcast when he heard what you said before.
Yeah, no,
he's very upset.
Absolutely no problem with him ever.
Neil was over it last week, Jules. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Andrea Locatelli, we have a new world champion in World Supersport 600. A little bit annoyed on Saturday, though, because of what happened. His perfection was, destroyed, really. Andy Vadoia winning the race with all the rain. Who saw that coming? No one.
And just a quirk of the rule book.
Yes, yes.
You know, a quirk of the rule book.
He'd gone through Sector 1, hadn't he?
There have to be rules. You know, the rule is you count back to the sector, not the lap, because we have the technology to do that now. And Vadoia had pressed on after everybody else had pitted, and hey presto, he was a winner.
Could you say that was also quite smart in a way, because he thought, I've got nothing to lose, I'm down in 14th, 15th place.
I've no idea.
I might as well take a risk here.
I have no idea.
He probably would have come off, wouldn't he, if the race had gone on any longer, had to pit, obviously.
Well, you think of Bradley Smith at Misano.
Yeah.
Going, you know, not pitting.
That's true.
For a dry, wet, dry race and getting through to the podium.
Mm. I mean, the track was flooded, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On Saturday for Barcelona.
Oh, it was. It had to be red flagged. There was no option.
Locatelli, Jules, it really was never in doubt this year. It's amazing, really, sitting here already thinking, the World Championship's done. He's won it already. He's already world champion.
Yeah.
He's almost hardly started.
Four races left in this World Championship.
Four races left. But that team and the rider, they're just, as James Whittam said a couple of weeks ago, they've just been better than everyone this year.
yes, the motorcycle racing is a team sport, and Locatelli looks like the best rider in that grid, and the bike looks like the best bike on the grid, which tends to tell you the team in the pit garage is the best on the grid as well.
Especially the fact they've just won it for 2 years in a row now as well.
Quite.
Krumenacka and Caracasulo 1-2 last year. Before we head off, Supersport 300 very quickly. Jeffrey Bowes maintains the championship lead, but let's talk about our very own Tom Boothamos.
Yes.
Yuta Akaya, by the way, the first ever Japanese winner in Supersport 300 on Sunday afternoon, and the first Japanese winner in the paddock since 2010 with Haga.
And Tom Boothamos, the first Briton,
yes,
to win in the class.
From the first British pole?
From the first British pole on Saturday.
And it could so easily have been a double, and then all hell breaks loose on the last lap of the last race.
With a Looney Tunes manoeuvre, frankly.
Yeah, it was Unai Aradre. Sofoglu was involved, wasn't he, behind. Scott Drury just kept out of the way.
Yep.
And it wiped out Tom Boothamos, who was doing everything right.
I had done everything right. I mean, there was lots of pressure on him.
He'd said, hadn't he, to us, and we'd said it in the commentary earlier in the weekend, I want to be out of the carnage at turn 10.
He was thinking of the first lap, though, not the last lap.
Yeah. And unbelievable, really.
And he was, I'm going to say he looked comfortable, that he was going to come with it comfortably, but he looked like he had a plan. And
yes,
he's been so comfortable on that bike all weekend.
Yeah.
I was sat here believing he was going
to
win it.
Me too. And he deserved to win it, didn't he?
I think so.
I think he rode better than everyone else all weekend, to be honest.
He got swallowed up a couple of times going down into turn one by the pack. But he worked his way back cleverly and efficiently every time.
Yes. Yeah. What a great shame for Tom Boothamos. But Yuta Akaya coming through to win. And just before we sign off then, Julian, a quick conclusion of the weekend. What's the story, as you would say? Well, I think we know the story now. We've got new stars emerging. I'll just throw my opinion in there for the sake of it. A new star emerging in Garrett Gerloff, which I think is tremendous. We've already had two new winners this year in Toprak and Rinaldi. Gerloff, could he even win a race before the end of the year? Who knows?
Well, why not, the way he went today?
Chas Davis is back on top, which is great to see. But championship-wise, I honestly think it's a combination of Kawasaki is winning it and Ducati are throwing it away at the moment. I think it's a bit of both.
It feels, from the commentary box, like the failure of the factory Ducati team to consistently, regularly challenge what Jonathan Rea can do. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, over the course of a weekend, Rea really is the master, isn't he, at putting it all together. Jules, thanks very much. We'll be back in action, of course, in a couple of weeks' time for the MagniCore round. But, of course, you're on Eurosport this coming weekend as well.
12 Hours of Estoril, final round of the World Endurance Championship. You know I'm a dreadful old anorak when it comes to endurance, so I'm looking forward to that.
That's a new race, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've got two Estoril events in the space of 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's about the one with very few tracks I've ridden round as well.
How did that go?
Slowly being me. FZ750 launch a long time ago.
Okay, very nice. Jules, thanks very much. World Superbikes, of course, going back to Estoril at the end of the season for the first time since 1993, and that brought a fair amount of carnage as well with a modified track on that occasion. But I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time for the MagniCore races.
Can't wait.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.